It's the Pick Six Podcast. We're back after a couple of weeks off. We've got lots to talk about. The Big Red Blitz was on Wednesday. Hi, I'm Sam McEwen along with Evan Bland. Tom Chattel will be joining us, I believe, somewhat shortly to talk all things Huskers. And there's a lot going on in the football program on the recruiting front. A lot of those guys went out yesterday during the Big Red Blitz and had some fun talking to fairly sparse crowds. Evan was in Kearney. I was in Columbus and Fremont. I think there were 50 in Columbus and 19 in Fremont. And then Evan had about 95 out there in Kearney. So Frost had a funny line about Charlie Daniels that we'll get into in a minute. And we'll kind of talk a little bit about what's going on with the Husker football program in June. They got their quarterback earlier this week, Richard Torres. We'll see if that helps some dominoes fall. We'll also update where they're at with the recruiting weekend coming up and, you know, just where they are with the class in general. Talk a little bit of recruiting math and figure out exactly why Nebraska may sign its smallest class in my memory. We'll also talk, obviously, about Husker baseball. We have not had a podcast since Nebraska lost to Arkansas, nor have we had a podcast since Arkansas lost to North Carolina State. So it'll be interesting to talk a little bit with Evan about everything that went on down there. We're going to spin it forward and just look at what's to come. They've had a lot of honors and awards. Spencer Schwellenbach obviously got second team All-American today. Very cool. Also, the baseball team got a commit, did they not? A recruiting commit from a pitcher.
Yep.
So they're in reasonably good shape there. So we'll talk a little bit of baseball. If we can squeeze in some hoops, all the better. There's not a ton going on in the program right at this moment, other than guys have arrived. They're going through some official and unofficial visits. Not sure how many guys they're going to add this year. They're going to have an incredible 2023 recruiting class, though, and we'll talk maybe a little bit about that if we get to it. We'll certainly try to touch on as many topics as possible here over the next hour. And then we will come right back next week with another podcast. And then, July, we'll see. There'll be a couple, I think. We'll see what we do in July. And then, of course, we hit this thing all, you know, full tilt late July before Big Ten Media Days. And then we go through to August. And, of course, we'll have one every week starting then. I want to remind everybody that our sponsor is Team Schwalbach. The Schwalbach Agency is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with four licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell home, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska. They also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles. I think the boats are getting some use this week and this weekend. 105 here in Lincoln today. Can't remember it ever happening. Negative 31, I think, back in January, February, 105. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mossecker, Carl Martin a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Free, no obligation insurance reviews and quotes. They're going to make sure all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. Again, 402-590-5200 or www.nebraska.allstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you to Team Schwalbach and the Schwalbach Agency. Evan, your screen is the whatever they call that thing in Kearney. It goes over the interstate, the arch.
Yeah, the arch. Yeah,
yeah, that's where you were. Wasn't too far. You didn't have to go too far into town last night, I think, for the second stop on Scott Frost's Big Red Blitz. An intimate crowd, right? When we'd been did this back in 2018, the places were packed. He got about 90 at Kearney. There was 50 or so in Columbus for one of mine, and 19. I think Mike Patterson was up in South Sioux City. There was 75 up there for old Will Bold at a golf course. I'm not sure they could get more than that in there at Covington Links. So he did pretty well. But overall, you know, the crowds are down. Maybe the enthusiasm's a little down. But Scott seemed to be in good humor out there in Kearney, and you wrote some really good stuff. I'm curious if you could recap that a little bit and maybe some of the things that you got out of yesterday's availability with the coach.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. I mean, I counted 90 to 100 people there, including media and some of the Nebraska folks that came in. But yeah, it was, to me, what was most notable about it was how at ease Scott Frost was. Like, we most of our interactions with him come in press conferences and those availabilities the Thursday before a game, these kind of scheduled things. This was a rare chance to see him just interact with fans. And he made a point in both North Platte and in Kearney of saying he didn't have any prepackaged message. Somebody even asked him before his Kearney event, like, what did he want the fans to know? And he said, whatever they want to know. Like, he wanted to have a free flowing conversation. He wanted the questions. He asked some of the fans questions. I thought he was funny for the most part. Somebody asked him about the 1997 season and they mentioned Washington, and he stopped him and he said, you sound a lot like Coach Osborne, the way you say Washington and Missouri and things like that. And, he's asking certain farmers where they farm in town and what high school they went to. And if anyone notable from a football perspective came out of there, he had a handful of footballs that he would throw to fans that asked what he thought were good questions or interesting questions, and had some self-deprecating humor about, you guys have seen me throw in college and this is why I was a DB in the NFL and things like that. And so I just thought it was a fun 40 minutes where he was relaxed. But at the same time, there were some, I thought, more serious thoughts that he gave in relation to name, image, likeness and what that's going to mean to college football and college sports in general, the transfer portal and how that is changing the sport. And I thought he was real honest about both things, saying, like, when it comes down to it, he's not necessarily in favor of either of them. But Nebraska is going to roll with the punches and, like, they're going to use it to their benefit. Like, I thought that's fair, right? Like, if you don't agree with it, but it's adapt or die. And I think he understood that. And so it was fun. It was interesting to see him in a different atmosphere. You could tell that it's been a busy month. I mean, he mentioned that too, about how the staff's going to need a little downtime before they ramp up to the season, because, he's mentioned these situations where they have personal workouts on the hour with official visitors in the building, and he's talking with different officials about different things going on. And so it has really been a busy month for him. I felt like in some ways this was kind of a day off for him to kind of get out in the world and interact with people kind of outside everything that's going on within the program.
It is. It's interesting too. He mentioned, the recruiting numbers being low, and we'll get more into that in a second. What's interesting to me is that Nebraska is looking for clarity from the NCAA as to whether that large junior class, whether if they come back next year, their scholarships won't count against the 85 total. What else did he say about that? Was there some impression that maybe the NCAA would consider that or not? Because I just hadn't had the impression that the NCAA was going to extend this beyond 1 year, but Frost's comments seem to indicate perhaps the NCAA is considering that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's almost like, the decision now that COVID is a year kind of removed from affecting those seasons, it kind of will start to trickle down, right? Where so the super seniors this year had an opportunity to come back or not with that extra season, but everybody else got that extra season as well. Right. So now the junior class that will be seniors in for the 2022 season, presumably, should get that same opportunity. Right. I mean, they also had that extra season, so they could come back.
Well, they're going to get the opportunity.
Right.
Whether or not the scholarships count. In other words, we would have high scholarship counts for 5 years.
Or that or whatever the super senior class would be. Yeah. Wouldn't count toward the limit, I think, was kind of the idea that they didn't have clarity on. But it wasn't just that. It was also, the free one-time transfer and how that kind of accelerates the extreme range of possibilities, right? Like, guys that could come in, guys that could leave. So like right now, he said it's impossible to predict. If they had to look at it right now, he said, yeah, mid-teens, somewhere in there, someone throughout the number 14. He said, that's probably about right. But there's so much attrition. There's so much movement with, again, not just the super seniors and whether that'll count to the limit in the future, as well as the transfer portal. And it just makes it a moving target where you don't know what you're after. So I think his approach for now was like, okay, we're assuming it's a smaller class. It allows us to vet these guys deeper, to really feel good about the types of people that we bring in, both in terms of talent and character. And then you just kind of have to adjust, right? Like you don't know beyond that at this point.
It's interesting. Yeah, that's good. Well, we'll get back to that in a minute. I'll kind of recap what we heard in Columbus and Fremont. And I haven't really written yet about Eric Chenander's comments. He had some really interesting comments about recruiting that I'll hit on at some point, maybe not tomorrow, maybe even not Monday, but I'll start with him. You know, he has a certain, what you call, I guess, settled and rooted confidence about who he is and what his defense is. I think he feels really good about where the seniority is on that defense and the experience and the seasoning, the way that he talks about that group, whether it's Cam Taylor-Britt or, you know, linebackers or defensive linemen, just the confidence that he has about the standards that they're setting. He feels like they're setting a standard that's high, really, really high, and he doesn't have to impose that on people because they're sort of imposing that on themselves. And that I think is a notable thing for him. I think he was, you know, pretty excited about where they are from a size, strength, experience standard. Everybody knows that already. I mean, they've got a lot of guys coming back. But he felt also very good about a lot of the players who are what you might call one wave away from hitting the shore. So you have all of these older guys, and he said, you know, when these super seniors came back, they're the kind of guys that don't really want to come off the field, even in spring camp. He said that about Williams and Dismuke, obviously, and Taylor-Britt. Doman was wise, I think, and didn't do a lot. I mean, he kind of geared it back, which I think was good. It gave Javon Wright and Isaac Gifford a chance to do some more stuff in practice. But he said, you know, when these guys all decided to come back, we have to communicate to these kids to stay patient for one more year. But he's like, you know, once their time comes, he feels like they can just kind of be installed and plugged in. So his confidence in Miles Farmer and Noah Pulgates and Javon Wright and Isaac Gifford and some of the other linebackers is really, really high. One thing he said, and this was reaffirmed by Mike Dawson, who does not really coach him, is that Nick Henrich had as good of a 3 weeks in spring camp as anybody on the defense. And so I think our presumption heading into the summer and heading into the fall was, well, this is probably Chris Kolarvik and Luke Reimer. Obviously, Will Honus is probably hurt. Nick's going to be in a rotation. I wonder if Nick doesn't start. Dawson also indicated that Henrich has kind of moved back to inside backer. I know Henrich kind of vacillated between the two last year, but he's not vacillating right now. He's at that inside backer spot, and Chenander was really, really high on his play. The other thing that Dawson said, and you know, he and Chenander are really close. They're tight. And Dawson joked a little bit. He's like, you know, that I can't, sometimes the Northeast in me just comes out and I can't help it. Dawson has a lot of thoughts about that defense. I mean, he's pretty honest about, you know, pitching in his two cents. And he said one thing that you know, when he was the defensive line coach back in 2018, his wife had everybody over for dinner. That's pretty common for position coaches. They have a feast and whatever. And his wife kind of pulled him aside and said, "Where is everybody?" And he's like, "Well, this is everybody. We don't have that many defensive linemen on the team." And she was like, "Well, no, we're the big guys." And the truth is, and this is true, Nebraska's defensive line was not full of big guys when Dawson got here. Doesn't mean that Carlos and Khalil Davis weren't really good which they are, because they're in the NFL. However, I don't know that Carlos and Khalil fit what they wanted to do with this sort of 3-4 defense and whatever. And now they've got guys, he mentioned Ty Robinson and Casey Rogers, has put on a lot of good weight as guys that kind of fit the identity of what Nebraska wants. Obviously, you know, you look at Roquan Buckley, he's going to fit that too. Jordan Riley, Masai Newsome is somebody that Chenander mentioned. And so the confidence in the next wave of players just seems really high. And Chenander seems really positive about the developmental pipeline that they're starting to create. And that maybe these super seniors actually help that process a little bit, because now Nebraska's got one more year to work with Farmer and Pulligates where they don't have to be the starters. They've got one more year where they can maybe develop a defensive lineman and they don't have to throw him right out there. He feels pretty good about where they're at. And they didn't lose a lot of guys that they didn't want to lose, if that makes sense, with the exception of the four guys from Florida who left right away last year. And so, you know, it's an interesting time on that defense, and he felt really, really good about it. Verduzco was really honest. I thought he was very frank about where Adrian Martinez is as a quarterback. He said that Martinez knows more than ever that he can't beat himself, and he can't hurt the team with turnovers. And a lot of that was fumbles, which is sort of interesting, but he knows that now. And anybody who read my story today, kind of understands. Verduzco's really frank about Martinez and why he got benched and the mistake he made at Northwestern and the way they sat him down and talked to him about it, so on and so forth. They're higher on some others than I think probably a lot of fans and even the media is. I knew when we went to that open practice, Evan, that we were going to take things from open practice that we probably shouldn't take as it relates to Logan Smothers. We shouldn't have done, and I didn't feel like I did that, but I feel like other people did, and they're like, well, this is where this guy is, and this is the problem they have. And it may turn out to be that Smothers is not, you know, a fit for Nebraska. But you could tell he was working through things in that practice versus being the final product. And
yeah,
Verduzco feels pretty good about where he might be come the start of full camp. And I still think it's very important that he's ready to go, because to ask Heinrich Harburg to go in there as a true freshman who still has to gain weight and all these other things and learn the offense will be a big ask for a second teamer. If Martinez gets dinged up, for example, or has to go put a cleat back on, boy, you'd love to have Logan Smothers go out there for three plays. You don't really want to take, you know, Harburg and you know, hand off three times because he isn't quite ready to run all aspects of the offense. So they like Smothers. Mm-hmm. Austin was pretty boilerplate. He did mention that, you know, the Branson Yeager is a fluid situation. That'll be something to watch in terms of whether Yeager is with the team in the fall. He was a 2021 signee who enrolled early but didn't really take place in camp. And then Dawson, I'll write about this at a later date. It's not that interesting for a podcast, but he broke down everything about what his position does and doesn't do. And it was interesting. And I'm not going to go into it here because it probably reads better than it sounds. But he had a 6-minute dissertation on the outside linebacker position and why why guys will be in 2-point stances or 3-point stances, and how when they go to a 4-man front, it looks like a 2-5-4 or whatever, but it's really a 4-2-5 or what. And so he kind of went through a lot of those pieces. The last interesting thing from Dawson was that when it comes to special teams, he said a lot of college coaches are hung up on the assignments that players have to execute on a given special teams. He is not. He focuses on the technique and the fundamentals of the assignments, and then gets to the assignments when it's time to get to the assignments. And so he said that's an NFL approach that he has seen work. You work on the how, not on the what. And the what is much easier to do if you're good at the how. So that's kind of what we heard. And there was a lot more that we can get into, but that was sort of the broad brush of what I heard in Columbus and Fremont. It was pretty good stuff.
Yeah. I want to circle back to the quarterbacks for a minute too. I thought it was notable. Scott Frost, in relation to Adrian Martinez, actually, this is the first time I can recall him leaving the door open for Martinez to actually have two more years back at Nebraska. I mean, we knew he had that eligibility because of the COVID season, but I mean, he actually said on Wednesday that he hopes that Martinez would come back and that maybe the NIL legislation that's coming out and maybe the on-field success that Nebraska has would bring him back in 2022. So that was on his radar. I mean, he said, yeah, he loves this kid. He would love to have him for two more years. You know, I thought that was notable. And then he talked a little bit about quarterback recruiting too. And, you know, some of his history, recruiting the position. And someone tried to ask him about Richard Torres. And of course he couldn't talk directly about him, but he did say that, you know, body shape of the quarterback, height, things like that aren't necessarily something that he was focused on, right? And you've written a lot about it, how Nebraska wants to get bigger, but he said that doesn't really apply to the quarterback position. He said, yeah, you know, if everything else being equal, he'd take the bigger guy, but that part of it really isn't that important for Nebraska as it's finding those quarterback pieces. So I thought that was kind of interesting too.
I figured they'd say that.
Yeah, just that sort of approach.
I figured they'd say that. B, Richard Torres is not one of the top five quarterbacks in the country by any recruiting service. Nebraska offered him before any other major school offered him, and you can't tell me they offered him because he wasn't 6'6". I just don't. I think Richard Torres at 6'1", maybe doesn't get that offer. I think there's something about his arm strength and about his ability to look over a defense that matters. And again, it's different from saying, well, I mean, who wouldn't take Cam Newton? Well, yeah, who wouldn't take Cam Newton? Cam Newton was the number one quarterback in high school, much less the number one quarterback in junior college. Yeah, well, nobody's talking about Cam Newton here. We're talking about a guy that Nebraska put its money down on before anyone else did. And that to me speaks to something. And Harburg was not that different. I mean, Harburg had an offer from Boston College, had a couple other offers, yes, but Nebraska, I think, is saying something about, hey, when you have this kind of quarterback in your program, the one thing you don't have to worry about is having to navigate the trees just to find a lane to throw it.
Sure.
They can over the defense. I know. I think I said this on a radio show. I knew they were going to say, no, 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 it doesn't have anything to do with that. I know. I get that. I get it. And I understand it. And believe me, if the best quarterback in the country that rolls by is 6'1" and 193 pounds and he's the next Kyler Murray, Nebraska sure will take it. Absolutely. I just think there can be advantages to recruiting a guy who is the size of a Harburg, who is the size of a Torres, who is the size of a Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert at 6'1 probably isn't Justin Herbert at 6'5". And, you know, that's just what I see. And the other guy they were going to bring in, if Torres hadn't committed, I would not describe him as an option quarterback. So AJ Bianco is not going to come this weekend. Visit canceled, so on and so forth. I would not describe AJ Bianco as a Mackenzie Milton. I mean, he's not a water bug, moving in and out of traffic. He's a pocket quarterback. So we'll see where it goes. But I actually like what Nebraska's doing, but I kind of figured they would say it's not a big deal.
Sure.
You know, and that it doesn't have anything to do with anything. But maybe that's absolutely true.
I mean, the point stands that, like, they've done well with different sized quarterbacks. Milton, 5'11", Martinez, 6'2", Smothers, 6'2", Mariota, 6'4".
6'5".
Yeah, Herbert, 6'5". And then they get Torres and Heinrich Harburg are taller guys. So maybe that's part of the evolution. But, you know, it's not like
that. Milton is really is a smaller guy. This is true. There's no question that Mackenzie Milton's game is probably closer to Kyler Murray or whatever you want to call it. And there are guys like Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray who are just really good at navigating pockets and moving around and have great arms and all those things. That's all true. I just when Nebraska's, you know, there's ways of going about that. There's the Brooke Behringer style. You remember Brooke? He was a big guy, and mm-hmm. you know, there's the Eric Crouch, and Eric wasn't quite as big. Now Eric was a better college football quarterback than Brooke was. That, I mean, you know, it was, but he was also the best college quarterback in the country. So you have, it's relative to how good is the 6'1", 6'2" guy compared to, you know, the 6'5" guy. It'll be interesting to watch. I like what they're doing at that position. You know, I think you were covering baseball when Torres was at Friday Night Lights. There's some weight to gain there. You know, that you know, that's going to be a year or two process. He's a big kid and got, obviously, you know, has all the attributes, big hands, all that, but probably has to put on some weight, and he will. They'll take care of him there. To the recruiting piece, to this recruiting piece. So Frost said 14, 15. Right now they're at 4. That includes Torres. If they're going to kind of stand pat at 14 for now, they could be at that pretty soon.
They could.
I know they're only at 4 right now, but, you know, they've kind of lined it up to where when guys get to the end of the month, there's going to be some guys that, you know, that they want to, that I think are going to want to get in the boat. And I think Nebraska might even have choices at some of these spots.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I don't know. When I hear the smaller class thing, I know the COVID situation changes it, but man, I just feel like the last 3 or 4 years, it's been kind of the same thing where at this point in the year, you think, well, it's going to be a smaller class, but you know, attrition is going to inevitably crop up again. And I mean, personally, I feel like it's going to get up to 20 again, 21, 22, because guys are going to leave. And it's not anything against this staff or this program, but like, that's just kind of how it goes. Is if you're not in a big role, and if you don't think your situation is great, maybe you can find a better one somewhere else in terms of playing time, you're going to move on. And I just think we've seen too much of that in the last 2 years to think this is the year that everybody stays and Nebraska has a smaller class. Like, to me, that sort of projection is like what you would think 10 years ago when most people stayed, when there was very little player movement from school to school, when you have to sit out a year. So I don't know. I guess I kind of take it all with a grain of salt and think like, yeah, that's where it stands now. But there's going to be so much movement that goes on that we can't even predict right now, for whatever reason, that to me, it's going to fill up. They're going to get 20, you know, a little more than that. And like you said, I mean, they've had a lot of official visitors in, another big weekend coming in this weekend that you're previewing. And so that number should shoot up here pretty quickly, but I just think, you know, they're still going to be in the market for guys midway through the season, late in the season, because of just all the activity that goes on. And maybe they save those 3 and 4 scholarship spots, like Scott Frost said again Wednesday. And that's kind of their approach, is they'll earmark 3 or 4 spots for the transfer portal, and everybody else they'll fill up with high school recruits. So maybe that's kind of what it becomes. Maybe by you know, Halloween, you have everybody in the boat you want from high school, and then you just kind of turn to the transfer portal, and you make up for the guys that you lose by bringing in guys from the FCS or from other programs or whatever it might be. Maybe that's kind of the new rhythm that the Nebraska will take when it comes to recruiting and bringing in classes.
Maybe it is. I think that's a good point. It's entirely possible that the NCAA doesn't make much movement on the 25 that you can offer out each year. A thought that I offered, you know, in press conferences, and I think I've written about, is you get 25 and then you get a special 5 scholarship dispensation for the portal only. And I think the reason that I like that is because it is pro athlete. It's really not pro team. Like, if you create a special dispensation for the portal only, it's probably going to actually increase the number of kids who leave. However, what's happening now is prospects are getting stuck in the portal, and they're not easily getting out. And for every Luke McCaffrey, there's who's able to somehow go to two different schools. And I don't want to get a lot into that. I think that was sort of a manufactured drama on Christian McCaffrey's account. I don't really understand what Christian McCaffrey is angry about related to those comments. Now, if there's something else out there that was between Frost and McCaffrey family, that's a different thing. But my understanding of the situation is that Frost and Verduzco were pretty amenable to Luke McCaffrey doing whatever he wanted to do here, and Luke decided to move. But for every Luke McCaffrey situation, there's other kids that go in there and they don't get out, or they've got to go down to D2 or something like that. So I'd like to see a special dispensation, not a 30 overall tender, not something where you say now you get 30 and then there's teams out there that are like, all right, well, we'll just take, we'll take five more high school guys and there's five more five stars that go to Alabama and Ohio State. No, I'd like it to be specific to transfer portal work. And that way you can the high school kids are still kind of getting distributed well, but you're also looking at, maybe favoring a team that might use the portal a little bit more often. That would probably resolve some of the issues. If they stay at 25, it is what it is. I think you'll see Nebraska reserve like they did this year, four or five scholarships going forward. Simultaneously, so the way that I thought about this, and I had talked to other folks and maybe even to you, Evan, about it, is I figured that most teams would go into August and already know with players, hey, this will be your last year, junior, who's really a senior, fifth year junior. We anticipate this being your last year. We're going to go ahead and keep recruiting kids. We're going to go ahead and keep recruiting, the 2022 class. And, we wish you best of luck. But this will be your final season at school X. Doesn't appear to be happening that way. If you look at, I think it was Bud Elliott who wrote from 247 Sports, a story about the sheer low number of commits here in June. And some of that's because the prospects are taking more visits. But I also think that schools are just not taking as many players. And I think maybe that's because they have not gotten to the point where, they want to cross the bridge with their players already in the program to say, well, whatever the NCAA says, we're going to go ahead and keep you at a regular eligibility clock and you'll be out of here, on the old standard. Maybe it's that old phrase, a bird in hand is worth two in the bush, where you already have this guy in your program. You already have poured all these years of development into him. You have a free year of bonus development, bonus, whatever, you're going to take it. And I don't think that applies to Adrian Martinez. They would have taken Martinez either way. I mean, that's not,
Sure.
Like Martinez is one of the best players on the team. So he's kind of a no-brainer. If he wants to come back and play in 2022 for Nebraska football, by all means. And Nebraska's schedule next year is not nearly as hard as it is this year. But there's some other guys on that list, that you look at that are juniors right now. And, you kind of look at it and you go, okay, do you want to go ahead and bring back a Jordan Riley do you want to bring back a Matt Sichterman or a DeAndre Thomas? I mean, they're already there. They've had three or four years of Zach Duvall's weight training. It makes sort of reasonable sense, Evan, that you would kind of want to, just keep those guys in the program versus, relying on a true freshman who may or may not be anywhere near playing, especially on the defensive line. So it'll be interesting to watch that. I do think that Nebraska's recruiting is, they've done a lot this summer in terms of doing 40 workouts. Eric Chenander said that's a lot. So we'll see what they do with that. I think they're probably going to get at least one corner, maybe two. They'll get a safety, I think. They'll get at least one running back. I think Ashton Hayes would come to Nebraska and, he would commit to Nebraska. I think Justin Williams is out there, though, and Williams is a little bit different player. Can they take them both? I don't know. I think they could end up they could end up probably taking four wide receivers. I don't think they will. I think right now they've got, you know, they've obviously got Victor Jones. I think they could add Landon Sampson. I think they could add Grant Page. I think they could add another guy. I think Ashton Hayes could kind of play a little bit of slot, kind of like a Will Nixon, only plays more running back. So I think they've got options. Now they just have to sort through them. And then there's all these like fringe guys like a, you know, a Vince Genitone from North Platte and, you know, Carson Hagerly, who is, I think, coming down from North Dakota to do a, to work out tomorrow. So there's all these, all these other little, you know, guys that they could add to the program. So the truth is Nebraska's done a pretty good job of filling up their positional needs going into this class. And so they don't have to, reach. They can take guys that they really feel like fit them. And if that means it's only 14 or 15 right now, then that's okay. The one thing that I think Nebraska is emphasizing, and Shenander talked a little bit about this, is they must make sure that the guys that they get want to be at Nebraska and they fit the program and the expectations. And I don't love the word culture because I think that's, you know, whatever, but fit what Nebraska is looking for. And I think they're getting closer and closer to that.
Well, yeah, I was going to add something similar. I mean, I felt like hearing Scott Frost talk Wednesday, I mean, he very much emphasized that piece of it about, you know, not wanting, he said one of the reasons they want to limit who they bring in the transfer portal is because they don't want to bring in the wrong guy, somebody who can mess with that equilibrium. And so I absolutely think that's, to your point about the juniors and guys younger, I think that's why, one big reason why they're going to welcome them back with open arms for 2022 if they want to come back. I think Matt Sichterman's a perfect example of a guy who wasn't a heralded recruit necessarily, who's not going to maybe be
right. He's a good
Big Ten, but he's great for what they're looking for. He's going to do his job. The locker room's going to be better. The chemistry or whatever you want to call it is going to be better because he's there. And so why would you force a guy like that out and take a chance on a high schooler, possibly of similar background, to come in who's less developed, who's less of a sure thing in all those intangible ways? So I absolutely got the impression that the character piece or the commitment to the program or whatever you want to call it is huge and something that they're really protecting and looking at just as much as roster composition and talent and things like that.
And Sichterman has options outside of football, so this may be his last year, even if he wants that to be. Some of these guys may want to move on. I mean, if Nebraska is given the opportunity, if Austin Allen and Travis Vokolek go to Scott Frost and say, we'll come back for 2022, I mean, that'd be hard to turn down. But I also think both of those guys can play in the NFL next year. I mean, I don't know that neither one of them need much more seasoning. I think they're both NFL potential players, could also move on. So that'll be interesting to watch. I kind of thought schools would do that before the season began, and as a result, you would see the numbers, like the commit numbers, be higher, but it seems like that's not necessarily happening. So we'll see what happens with this recruiting weekend. They've got a pretty good group of players coming in. The one I think to watch is James Mons. He's a corner from Fort Pierce, very high on Nebraska's list. Nebraska's high on his list, but Indiana is going to be hard to beat. Indiana beat Nebraska a couple of years ago for a cornerback by the name of Taiwan Mullen. He's now an All-American.
Yep.
Taiwan Mullen is James Mons' favorite player. Taiwan Mullen is also the person who hosted James Mons III on his visit to Indiana. So, yeah, that's interesting. So most people have framed this discussion about James Mons III in terms of his great uncle, Wonder Mons, who played at Nebraska. And that's fine. I mean, his great uncle speaks highly of Nebraska the times that James talks to him. But James has 25 relatives who have played college football.
Mm.
Yeah, so it would be, and this is where Nebraska, you know, the tunnel vision of Nebraska can hurt us. Yep. We hear the name, we hear Wonder Mons, and we think that, well, there's the only connection this kid has to college football. No, no, no. His 25 relatives who have played the sport, some of whom I think he probably talks to more. And so he knows all about this. He's been playing since he was 5 years old. He knows all about college football, and Nebraska will not be able to lean on the family connection in order to land. Now, Nebraska knows that. I think fans and media don't always. They just have a presumption. And no, this kid has been playing football his whole life, and his whole family's played. So nothing will be new in that regard. So Indiana's going to be hard to beat, and then he goes to Wisconsin after he goes to Nebraska. That'll be one to watch. They have another guy coming in, Nathan Vail, who I think is somebody that will be interesting to watch. They have him coming in. I think another guy committed to West Virginia. Bin Wahad from Atlanta. He picked West Virginia, I think, on Wednesday. So Nebraska's added Nathan Vail to the mix. At the end of the day, I think Nebraska's doing pretty well with the official visitors who have come. But it may not be for a couple of weeks. Want to talk a little baseball?
Sure.
Okay. So your coverage from Fayetteville was terrific. Really appreciated everything you wrote. Thought you captured the scene. Z did a great job too with photos. Oh. It was just, you know, it was a lot of fun. I think it was the first time that I think Nebraska fan base has kind of woken up and really been engaged in a big moment. Maybe volleyball counts too, but I think baseball is different because it was in front of a big crowd and it felt electric, even on TV. This program is going to change a lot in the off season. We already know that. Best player on the team is not going to return. Spencer Schwalenbach is almost certainly going to the major leagues. Some other guys may not return either. So when you think about this program at this moment, how far did they come in a short amount of time? What is going to change in the offseason, and how can they keep the momentum going?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot changed in a short amount of time. The COVID season in 2020 is a fascinating wrinkle to me to the ascent of this program, because they were just 7-8 that first year. And obviously you never want a season to get wiped out, but I felt like in some ways it really helped Nebraska, because it was just enough action for the coaches to identify what their weaknesses were. And that was mostly pitching, starting and in the bullpen. And it allowed them to address that in the previous offseason through recruiting. They had guys like Cam Wynn, Cody Frank, who were key bullpen pieces, Chance Roach, Max Anderson, through pandemic circumstances, flips from Texas A&M to Nebraska. So those were all key pieces to what happened going into this spring. And then, you know, I think the way that the staff, coaches hitting specifically, really led a lot of the returning hitters to having their best years at Nebraska. Luke Roskam simplified his approach. He was excellent. Joe Acker settled in atop the lineup. He was great. You know, Jackson Hallmark embraced being kind of that small ball guy, that table setter, even though he hit for some power late in that Arkansas regional. So guys that were new, like Bryce Matthews, Max Anderson, some of the pitchers contributed immediately. Some of the older veterans, especially in the lineup, got better, I think, with coaching and development. And so that kind of culminated in what you saw this last year, winning the Big Ten, going toe-to-toe with Arkansas. And so now you head into this offseason where you lose Schwellenbach, you lose maybe your entire starting outfield, depending on what Jackson Hallmark decides to do. You lose possibly to your top two starters. Cade Povich may or may not go pro. He may come back. Chance Roach is gone. He's already doing well in the independent league and hoping to catch
on. I saw that. Yeah, he already had a start.
He did, yeah. He like seven innings, one run, like one strikeout, like just classic Chance Roach. But so, you know, a lot of it's going to come down to how do they develop the guys that were here this year, especially because they didn't play midweeks and they didn't play non-cons. And so a lot of you talk about the second wave of guys in football, Sam, like in baseball, they have that group, but we just haven't seen them because typically those would be the guys that play on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and have bigger roles. But they feel good about some of those guys. I think Luke Sartori was an outfielder who would have gotten a lot more play. Cody Frank might have been the midweek starter for them. They feel like he could possibly be a weekend guy. So you kind of couple the development piece with the younger guys with what are they bringing in? You know, if Drew Christo can get here and avoid the draft, if Nebraska can get him to campus, you know, he's a guy who obviously was a national level recruit who could possibly be a weekend guy right away. I mean, CJ Hood out of Norris is a mid-90s pitcher as well, somebody who can contribute right away. They have a lot of hitters coming in from in-state, from the area. Chase Mason is a really toolsy outfielder from South Dakota that I'm going to have a story on next month a little bit more. He's another guy who could go in the draft, but if he makes it to Nebraska, has some real prodigious power and is a guy who, with a little bit of coaching, I think could be a really good player for them really quickly. And I think that's a theme when you look at some of the top programs in the country, is you're going to develop the guys that you have, and then there's always going to be a freshman or two or three that hit right away and contribute right away. We saw that with Max Anderson and Bryce Matthews last year. I think there's going to be a handful of those guys next year that are going to have to do that if Nebraska wants to, I guess, reload instead of rebuild. But, you know, it's hard to say that they're just going to keep moving forward, because you can't just replace what Spencer Schwellenbach was. I think Bryce Matthews will be that guy at shortstop for them next year. But, you know, you don't replace what Schwellenbach was. Right. He's not a pitcher. And I mean, he's going to go. He might be a first round draft pick here next month. Right. So the future is promising. It feels like to me that next year could be kind of a consolidation year where you have a lot of young pieces. You start building those guys up. Not to say that I think they'll be right in the mix to get to a regional again. But it feels to me like a year when you really start building momentum with the recruiting. You build up what this next team is going to be after you lost so many fifth-year seniors and maybe fourth-year seniors. And you kind of go from there, but I think they'll make it back to a regional. I don't know if next year is CWS or bust for Nebraska, but I think at the least you're going to be talking postseason and Big Ten contention again.
Most of the teams that are in the CWS are going to kind of come back next year with a lot of the same pieces, aren't they? Because you can't go to the major leagues until your third year.
Right. Yep. So you got to be 3 years out of high school, just like football, right? Where you have to be.
Well, you can go out, but yeah, it's like football once you get to college.
Once you get to college, yes. Yeah.
But most of these teams that are in the CWS are pretty young, aren't they not?
Yeah. I mean, Vanderbilt's going to lose Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter to they're going to be top five overall picks here next month. I think that was just kind of what it was across baseball this year, was a lot of guys returned, obviously because of the COVID year and the shortened draft. And, you know, that's just kind of how it was. Nebraska benefited from that too, with all those guys that I mentioned that came back. The quality of baseball was a lot higher this year. Mm. You know, that's just kind of the trend. And, you know, we talk about football and how some of these fifth year guys coming back are going to make those teams better. We saw that in baseball. Baseball was kind of that first season that was canceled in 2020 in March. And so we saw that this year where guys came back. Like, for example, you know, in a normal year, Nebraska would have lost Mojo Hagee. They would have lost Luke Roskam. They would have lost Joe Acker, right? So, like, those were guys. Chance Roach wouldn't have been here because he would have graduated. So, like, right. Nebraska in 2021, the season they just completed, would have been a much different team. They would have had to rely on a lot younger guys in key spots than they had to. So we talk about kind of what that looked like for football. I think we saw that in baseball where, you know, you're going to rely on the guys that you know, you're going to rely on the veterans. And so Nebraska benefited from that just as much as anybody, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm with you. I'm with you. What about this new pitcher who just committed?
Yeah, Jackson Jelkin. I'm hopefully talking with him today. I'd like to have a story today at some point, but he's an interesting guy, right? He out of Bellevue West. He's part of the 2021 class. And it's somewhat unusual in baseball for a prep kid to commit this late in the process. Like in football, you see it pretty often where guys commit, months before maybe they go to campus, but it's a little rarer in baseball. Nebraska had it with Max Anderson last year in those weird COVID circumstances. But in this case, Jelkin, I think, was a guy who really developed late. Like he had an outstanding spring with Bellevue West and the run they made to the state tournament. Will Bolt and Jeff Christie, it sounds like, got out and saw him this last week and just loved his stuff. He was committed to South Mountain Community College, which is the same JUCO that Cade Povich went to. Cade Povich was a Bellevue West kid as well. And his dad, Tim Povich, is the pitching coach there. And so that was the route it looked like that maybe Jackson Jelkin was going to follow as well. But he had such a breakout spring this year that the coaches wanted him to come to Nebraska now. So again, I'm hoping to chat with him and maybe kind of see what it was. Maybe he added a pitch or he grew into his body or something like that. But to get an offer this late, to me, suggests that he made some real big strides. And as a guy, as we saw in the Arkansas Regional, you can never have enough impact arms, especially in-state guys that want to stay and compete. And it sounds like this addition in Jackson Jelkin is someone who fits that mold.
Interesting. I think they've done a really good job of recruiting in state. We don't have easy, handy lists for recruits on that kind of stuff. Are they getting the best recruits in the state, generally speaking?
They definitely did for this class, 2021. Everyone knows Drew Christo and CJ Hood, but you can kind of go down the list with some of the different guys. I mean, Max Peterson is a kid that they added early in the process. Jax Brockett from Elkhorn South, Luke Jessen from Elkhorn South, Kyler Randazzo from Elkhorn, Corbin Hawkins from Millard West. Like if you look at most of the in-state rankings, I mean, these were the top guys on the list, and you can already look ahead to 2022 and they're doing the same thing, 2023. And so if there was one thing I think a lot of fans were upset about under the previous coaching staff, it was that there was a lot of quality in-state talent that went elsewhere and thrived elsewhere. I think Alec Bohm is the most obvious recent example. It's a guy who went to Wichita State, was a first round pick to the Phillies. Nebraska wasn't that interested in him. And so they've absolutely been hammering the in-state kids. And we saw it in Arkansas, right? Like there was a moment in that game three, that Monday night game at Arkansas, where Kyle Perry is throwing pitches effectively to Griffin Everett. I mean, you're talking, a couple of in-state kids holding their own and thriving against the number one overall seed. So, like, it can be done. We saw that it was done in Nebraska's glory days of the CWS runs in the 2000s. So we're going to see if they can do it again. But, like, I do think there is this I think it's maybe not – all that well known about how good the in-state baseball talent here is. Everyone knows kind of the football talent that Nebraska produces. Everyone knows that the volleyball, turns out players at a per capita basis that's among the best in the nation. I think the baseball piece is still somewhat under the radar, but certainly not to this staff. I mean, they've been hitting it hard.
Super, man. Well, hey, I think we've hit all the bases, so to speak. Basketball front, they've got more official visitors coming in this weekend. Nebraska could in theory bring back a lot of their players for the following year. We'll see how it all shakes out. The name obviously to watch, Isaac Trout. He's embraced the recruiting process. He just went to Virginia, he'll go to Michigan State. There'll be a trip to North Carolina. He may take some more official visits. That's the kid from Grand Island. Nebraska's positioned itself well. That said, I don't know that he's real close to making a decision. I think he's going to take the process out. Jason Green had a very good official visit to Nebraska as well, has one to Minnesota. we'll see where that goes from there. You know, we'll see how well, you know, he processes out. He had a good camp in Las Vegas. He will then go out onto the Under Armour circuit with Isaac Trout, same team, in July. And we'll see if Jason Green garners more offers or if he decides to commit before then. I think Nebraska certainly would be in the mix. They've done a really good job of targeting some point guards. They've got a couple of those coming in this weekend. And of course, they're doing a really good job with 2023 prospects like Omaha Bill U, Simeon Wilcher, who is the younger brother of CJ, and Gus Yaldin, I think is his name. So Nebraska recruits really, really well. And when they, you know, they'll know when they're, you know, they're ready to lock down somebody and have that commit. But they're in a really good spot right now in terms of their roster. You know, everybody's going to focus a lot of attention on Bryce McGowan's, and rightfully so. I think McGowan's is not only a really talented player, but I think he is a guy that is not allergic to defense, not allergic to being a teammate. Good kid. And so that's positive. But Wilcher and then Keon Edwards, watch those two. Because those two, I think, can be real positive additions right away for Nebraska. You know, Wilcher can really shoot. Edwards has a lot of game, and he can play some defense for you. He can play out on the floor. He might be able to play a little bit inside. That's an addition that I think is kind of getting overlooked a little bit. You know, Lat Mayen's obviously a little taller than Edwards, but I think Edwards is probably more agile to the hoop, might be able to get, you know, get to the rim more often. So I think Nebraska is in really good shape with this roster and has an opportunity to get a lot better this year. I don't know how much better. I think they feel pretty good about where they're at. The Big Ten is always tough. They'll have some non-conference games that'll be tough to play too. They'll have some soft ones as well. But this is a team that I think can double its win total, and that can be a starting point. So obviously they won 7. They can win 14. I think they can win more than that. Depends on if everybody stays healthy and everything comes together. Delano Banton declared for the NBA draft. He can return. He's got to withdraw his name, I think, by July 7th. I believe that's it, maybe before that. And he was not invited to the NBA combine. So I think that gives you a sense of what the NBA sees right now. Maybe Banton can, you know, improve his game and work on some things. I think, you know, the trajectory for him returning is probably pretty good. That's where the Husker Hoops team is right now. Pretty good place. The one thing about Nebraska basketball is the plan is so clear, and they're so organized, and there's such a straightforward understanding of what they want to do, that it does come down. It is really a matter of executing the vision. I mean, Hoiberg's has great clarity there, and Aptelmassett's got a great clarity in what they're looking for in players. And so it really does come down to doing the things that are asked, the players doing what is asked of them, and Hoiberg kind of putting the pieces where they want. And so I think they've emphasized development with this group. With Nate Lenzer, I think they've emphasized, you know, trying to get longer, bigger, a little bit more athletic defensively. I think they've done all those things. And now it's just the weeks and months that you put in to getting better and the long wait to the season. Because I think Nebraska's really hungry. I think the last 2 weeks of the season after Teddy left, let them understand what they could possibly do. And now they got to wait. They got to work and work and work and wait and then get to the season, and then we'll find out, you know. And I think they could potentially be pretty damn good, but it's like a 5 or 6 month wait. So in between then we get football, thank goodness. and I think the football team, that's going to be such an incredibly interesting story. I'll end on this. Do you get the sense that the smaller crowds was about when they were holding it, which was in the middle of the day? Or that people are just sort of, you know, blasé about Husker football right now. What do you think that was about?
I think it was, yeah, the time and when they held it. I mean, it was Wednesday. They were all Wednesday in the middle of the day with 100-degree temps across the state. Like, I don't know. I didn't read a ton into it because, like, what do you expect? Like, if you're out in the middle of the state like that, some people clearly rearrange their schedules to come out. But I think it's more than just about the crowds, too. It's they got their message out there, right? Like, yeah, sure, there were 100 people in Kearney or whatever, or wherever the different stops were. But the people that, you know, their message got out there through social media, through different media outlets that wrote about that. So, like, you know, what they wanted conveyed was essentially conveyed and consumed by the fan base, whether they were in attendance or not. So I know, I mean, I didn't read that into being like fan apathy or anything like that. I just thought, you know, what did you expect? Wednesday in the middle of the day? I mean, schedule that thing on a Friday or do it on a Saturday. And I know you can't do it with official visitors and everything else the staff has going on, but like, I think this is kind of the nature of the beast. If that's when you're going to do it, it's hard to get off work. It's hard to pop out there for an hour.
I agree. I will say, and I talked to Bill Moose about this, and I will write about it over the weekend. Nebraska football needs to come to Omaha. And, you know, I asked him, like, hard to see why Omaha is not on the schedule. You're going to 20 towns. Surprised Omaha doesn't make the cut. Feel like it should. I think you get really good turnout. You know, you have an event, you know, Wednesday night, 7 p.m. at the La Vista Embassy Suites. You don't think you're going to get 500 people? You're going to get 500 people.
Sure.
And, you know, there comes a, and so, you know, Moose said, hey, we're not skirting Omaha. We're not, you know, we're not avoiding it. It's important to us. We need Omaha. That's good. That's good. Like, I think that's good to hear. I think, you know, they came to Gretna, which is, I mean, it's Omaha, but it was Moose. And so I think it would be good, you know, if Nebraska football had, you know, a public event in Omaha in the evening. And I think you get a big turnout, and B, you know, maybe you charge $10 or something. I mean, there's no big deal in doing that. People will pay $10 to go see that. But these other events were open to the public, free of charge. They were serving ice cream at Fremont. You know, there's 20 people there. You do that in Omaha, and you're going to get a whole different, you know, you're going to get a lot of people who show up. So, you know, I think it would be good if they would make that trip, especially, you know, there's a lot of prospects up there. You're not going to bump into them or anything, but, you know, it's just good to see the presence in the city. So we'll see if that happens in the future. I think it's something that would benefit all parties, and I think people in Omaha would enjoy it as well. All right, well, that's all we have for this week for the Pick Six podcast. For Evan, I'm Sam. Chattel had technical issues, so wasn't able to join us, but we'll figure that out for the future. We'll be back next week. Evan will be in the throes of CWS coverage, but that's okay. That's okay. I encourage people to check out Evan and John, their CWS preview. It was really good. You guys all kind of had different favorites. John had the most unique pairing, I think, of the bunch. He was pretty interesting in his pairing. But that was good to listen to. So I encourage people to check that out. We'll be back next week to talk about what I suspect will be two or three more commits and just how everything lines up going into July, because that'll be a couple of quiet weeks for Husker football, we think. Watch list started today. JoJo Doman on the lot impact trophy watch list. Here come the watch lists. Hey, our camp countdown starts on Sunday. So our Husker camp countdown starts Sunday. You'll get to read that, and we'll talk about that next week. All right. For Evan, I'm Sam. Thanks.